Welcome back to the Mac Rumor Show. It's iPhone week, everybody. So if you just ordered an iPhone last week, congratulations. Hopefully yours have showed up on time or you picked it up. Hartley, which iPhone did you end up going with? I think I know the answer, but maybe you
I ended up choosing the iPhone 17 Pro in silver, unsurprisingly. So
yes,
that is basically almost the exact same device now I've bought for 5 years. Pretty much the same color every year, the same size. I'm very boring.
You said it, not me. I didn't say a single thing.
I didn't want to take the risk this year.
Why? What's the risk? Being too loud with an orange?
I feel like the iPhone Air, not the iPhone 17 Air, the iPhone Air is a little bit of an unknown device. We don't really know how people are going to respond to it. And we've had some early sales information through from Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, who says that it is selling better than the Plus models, at least over the first pre-order weekend, but not hugely. So if you think that the Plus models accounted for about 5% of sales, it seems to be doing three times better than that. So 15%, which is
pretty good.
It's better than the Plus, but I mean, it's nothing compared to the Pro models. The Pro models still undoubtedly steal the show.
Sure. I kind of expected this to be like a slow grow type thing. Like it needs to be seen out in the public first before it convinces the rest of the people, you know?
I agree. And it's one of those things as well where the in-store experience should sell it. It's one thing to see this super thin device, but it's quite another to have both the iPhone 17 Pro Max and the iPhone Air in your hands in the store and for the Air to win you over with its design.
Do you know what phone is the best one?
The orange one?
No. The iPhone 17. This is by far, hands down, the best one that Apple released this year.
I think it is the biggest upgrade for the standard models ever. And that seems to also be reflected in the sales. It seems to be selling extremely well, and you can see why. It's a feature-packed device. It is almost as good as last year's iPhone 16 Pro models, but at a significantly lower price point. I think people are really going to love that device.
So I've been using this since the event ended. Like, no joke, my SIM card is in here. I have not used my Pro Max since last Tuesday. And I don't really miss anything from it. I think the only thing would be the telephoto lens, but I haven't really been in a lot of spots where, like right now, I haven't been to anything where I like really needed the telephoto lens. You're right. It just feels like a 16 Pro, and that's a good thing because it's only $799?
That's right. Yeah.
And it's lightweight. It feels great in the hands. It's still got some glass on the back, which is actually, you know, I'm not really used to this type of like design because I've always come from the Pros and it just didn't have this feeling with the frosted glass and the aluminum frame. Like, it's just a really solid device. The display makes a huge difference. I can't believe how much I actually like it. Like, it's making me rethink the fact that I'm going to be jumping over to, you know, I haven't decided if I'm going to do the Air full time first or go right to the Pro Max, but the form factor, I understand why you go with the smaller phones.
I think another thing to bear in mind with the iPhone 17 in particular is that this device is going to be on sale for an extremely long time as the latest model. So we're expecting Apple's release dates to change. And the successor to this device, the iPhone 18, is expected to be released alongside the iPhone 18e, which is a year after the 17e, which we're going to get in the spring. So if you think about it, if you buy that iPhone 17 right now, that will remain the latest generation device for 18 months.
Yeah. That could be a good upgrade cycle. Maybe it's like kind of touches the, you know, it's like the middle ground, obviously, between a year and 2 years. So maybe there's some people out there who like, I don't need a new phone every year, but every 2 years seems like a little too long. This is perfect for you. Start doing that. But then it's only for 1 year and then you kind of go back.
It is only for 1 year, but I think that is reflected in quite what a strong device this is.
I think it'll be fine. Yeah, I want to get the word out even more because I feel like most people who are asking me and like have not come in with an already strong game plan of like, I'm going to get this device or this device. Like, this is the better option of the bunch just because of what you're getting and how little you have to spend to get to it. It's just, it's pretty good. So hats off to Apple for making me enjoy the 17. Like I completely dismissed it throughout the entire event. And then I got the phone and I was like, you know, okay, like kind of wanted the Pro Max, but we'll see how this goes, and got to use it. And I'm like, oh, no, wait, this is actually really, really good. So if you're unsure which one to get, take a look at the 17. Comes in some good colors. This is the Mist Blue, I think, or whatever it's called. But that is not our main focus for today. Our main focus is something that will make your phone feel entirely new, or your iPad, or your Mac, or your watch. Well, a little bit on your watch, a little bit on your TV, but it's all the new operating systems that came out. And this is a free upgrade. So if you haven't done it yet, stop what you're doing after you listen to this episode, of course. Start upgrading and updating your phone because there's a lot of good features. And we've been using it, or at least I've been using the betas since it came out. So Hartley, I think you've been too, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
What are your thoughts now that we're in like the official release? Has anything changed?
It's been really interesting going through the beta testing process, because I think when a lot of us in the tech community first got our hands on iOS 26, the reaction was a little bit unsure, because we've called out for a big sort of system-wide redesign for many years. And then we finally got it. And I think people were not sure if it went too far.
Yeah.
And my experience, at least, has been that I really like it. And it has really grown on me the more I use it. That has come hand in hand with Apple itself polishing that design through each successive update through the beta testing period, and refining some of these slightly temperamental things like transparency, just to hit that sweet spot. But what I will say also is that looking at the reaction online since iOS 26 was released, people do seem quite shocked by it. Some people really like it. Some people, it's a lot to handle. And my advice to those people that are not so sure about it would be to give it a chance, because it is a big change. But I think that if you stick with it, really, let's face it, you don't have much choice but to stick with it. you will get used to it and actually probably quite like it, unless it's a little bit of a different situation. Like you've got an older device, you've got that iPhone 12 mini, and it's just struggling on that small display and with that chip and battery by now. I'm sure that device does not like iOS 26 very much. But if you've got a recent generation, iPhone 15, iPhone 16, I think you will get used to it. And I think overall, probably you will quite like it.
Hey guys, just want to take a quick break to let you know this episode of the Mac Rumors Show is sponsored by Claude. You know, one of the coolest parts of my workflow lately has been experimenting with Claude. I've been using it to plan out projects, research across multiple sources, and even think through problems in ways I wouldn't have on my own. It's not just spitting out answers, it's helping me organize my thoughts and get to solutions faster. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at just good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether I'm sketching out a video script or working through a complex production timeline, getting stuff done for the podcast, it just feels like I've got a partner who's always on the same page. Another thing that's been a huge time saver is Claude's ability to connect with my tools. So I can pull stuff from Google Workspace, my Notion setup, even my calendar, and it gives me the context I need in one place. So there's no more jumping between apps or tabs. And honestly, the research capability is next level. I'll ask it to break down something technical, and it not only finds the info, but connects dots across dozens of sources that I'd never have thought to check. It's like having a second brain for the work that matters most. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, which is claude.ai/Mac or M-A-C. That's claude.ai/Mac right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. And that includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. That's claude.ai/Mac. Thanks, Claude, for sponsoring this episode. I feel like there's been a subset of people that like are now waking up to the fact that this is new. Like all the people that didn't do the beta are now like, oh, I've got this on my phone and I know nothing about it and I want it to go away because I absolutely hate it. And now those people are starting to show up in all of my YouTube comments that are like, or like Instagram reels, like everyone has been super negative about it. But before it was like definitely more positive. There were some people that were like, I hate this. And then as Apple refined it, it's gotten better. I've usually heard nothing but good comments. I cannot imagine the people's reactions if beta one was the actual release that we got now.
Yeah.
You would, if you think it's rough now, wait till you see what it was before, because it was not good. My first reactions post the event, like I loved everything they showed off, and then I got hands on with it and I'm like, this isn't that good. Like, I don't know that I can see and read everything that I need to read. I absolutely love iOS 26. I think I love all of the new operating systems. They have been, I mean, watchOS is so minimal that like Workout Buddy's cool, I guess. There's really nothing in there that does anything for me on a daily basis that I'm like, oh wow, this is such a huge improvement. TVOS, I finally updated yesterday, by the way. So we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll give TVOS a little bit of time. We'll talk about it. That's a very small update, but I do have a couple of questions because I have done absolutely zero research or work on TVOS because we've been so focused on iOS, iPadOS, macOS that there's just little time for the others. So we'll stick with iOS. What has been your favorite thing besides the design? Because that's kind of easy to point to, but like what has been a new thing that's happened in iOS 26 that you're like, dang, I can't believe I've been living without this, or this is such a good quality of life improvement. Sorry to put you on the spot, but
it's difficult to say what stands out in particular, especially after having used it for so many months. But ultimately, the biggest iOS 26 feature is its design. It's not actually really anything functional. And the fact is, every app now does feel quite different to use as a result of this more playful interface. So it really does have to come down to that, because it has refreshed the experience of using the device. Now, do I like it everywhere? No. There are some specific things, actually, that I really don't like.
Go on.
One of those is the clear mode for the app icons. I actually think it is a disaster. Because what it does, to me, they don't look clear. They look like they've been made like monochrome, frosted, black and white, and then they've just had the opacity turned down. Okay. But what I would have liked actually would have been them to remain in color, but to have more of a transparent, glossy effect. Because it just looks wrong to me. It looks like you've turned on an accessibility setting that has made everything black and white. So I don't love that. And I also don't love how some navigation bars now in pretty basic apps, like say the clock app, the effect of the sort of water droplet jumping from one button to another, it feels like a lot for a very small motion. And I don't know why that bugs me so much, but it feels like overkill.
What about in the clock app, that the fact that you can change from 9 minutes now to whatever, however,
that is a good change.
Snooze. That's a good change. So you gotta pick your battles. Also, I know this, we didn't talk about this, and this isn't really an iOS 26 thing, but I have seen this numerous times now. The fact that like when you're setting an alarm time and you scroll through the numbers, it's not an actual just circular rotation. It's just a long list of the same numbers repeated. Isn't that, bless you. Bless you. Oh, you muted your mic so we couldn't hear that.
I was just very quiet.
Oh, that's the quietest sneeze of all time. My sneeze is so loud. So you knew that, right? That the, like when you swipe through the numbers.
I mean, there are always these kind of really specific details that Apple has clearly given a lot of attention to, and especially with Liquid Glass and iOS 26, because Apple is looking at all of these apps pretty much from the ground up to consider how they work. I mean, a really good example of this is something like the phone app, where we have this new interface now. And that has taken a little bit of getting used to, but I do actually quite like it now. I feel like it's a much richer experience with really what's quite an important constituent app of the iPhone, and something that largely has been forgotten about.
Yeah, I mean, my game changer feature is all the screening messages and screening phone calls. I don't know if it's like this in the UK for you, but spam calls on a daily basis here are absolutely just outrageous. I probably used to get like 15 a day, and the spam texts, it's awful. And now it can do a better job of filtering it, so you're not seeing it in the spots that you want. But most importantly, the spam calls are not ringing my phone. I just see like a little notification badge saying like there was a phone call, or like something pops up in the lock screen, but I don't have to answer it. I don't have to worry about it. And if it is actually somebody, then they actually go through the screener and then I pick it up, and it's been perfect. So
it's a completely valid point. I don't get a huge number of those calls, so I haven't really noticed that feature. But in general,
you don't get a lot of spam calls?
Not a huge number. So I'm pretty lucky with that. But there are loads of communication features. I mean, you've got polls in messages now. There are backgrounds you can add. Yeah. And in general, I'm quite enjoying the redesigned messages app. Even things like the app drawer are a lot better now.
Yeah.
So I've really been enjoying that. The other thing I would like to draw attention to with iOS 26 in particular is actually Apple Intelligence.
Okay.
Because there are two Apple Intelligence features that I think are worthy of notes that have been useful to me. The first of those is the improved visual intelligence, where you can now screenshot. And this is really good for adding things like calendar events. So if you've got like a flyer or something and you want to add that directly to your calendar, you can just take a picture and it can do that right away. Even if that's something that's on your device, in a browser or in an email, it's far more straightforward. A really small little feature, but it's an example of where things are moving forward in this direction. And the other one is the ability to use Apple's foundation models in shortcuts, because this is offline. So even if you're on a flight with airplane mode enabled, where maybe you wouldn't be able to use ChatGPT or another model that relies on sending that information to a server, you can actually use Apple's model on device now, which is really good for simple tasks. So if you have shortcuts that do things, say, with your calendar or your task manager, and you need to pass information about maybe a date, or you need to reformat something. Previously in shortcuts, you would have to have used some quite complex steps to be able to set up those processes. But now you can just throw that directly into Apple's model and it will handle it. So for someone like me that is not very adept at creating complex shortcuts, this has enabled me to do things that I wasn't able to do before, because I can just provide a natural language instruction.
Is there one that you've made that like has been something you've been using a lot lately that was easy for you to create? I still look at it and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. So I just don't do anything with it. But I know that is a big feature that people wanted. And I'm just like, I need to sit down and actually focus on this for a minute.
I mean, it still is ultimately shortcuts. So you need to be able to come up with the workflow that you want to enable, yeah, and then actually carry that through. So for me, I get an email once a week with a tennis court that is assigned to me for my weekly tennis coaching. So I have a shortcut that I run when I have that email, and it passes which course I'm on and updates my calendar events.
That's good.
And formats that correctly. So it's a really simple thing. It's probably a bit unnecessary, to be honest, because I could just remember what court I'm on and just go there. But it is an example of how you can do that in a more straightforward way than you could before.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good features like this that honestly have been sprinkled throughout. I feel like it's more so like, okay, the major features are the ones that everybody's talking about, but it's a lot of these little like nuanced hidden features per se that like didn't get a ton of time that are really the ones that everybody are going to use a lot more. But everybody's just stuck on the design. That's the hot topic. How can we hate on the design. Also, when you were talking about the icons, I didn't get a chance to mention, but they quietly over the last beta, I guess, two betas, I don't know when they did this, but they snuck in like a new way to match your icons to your phone or your case color, which is insane. So I don't know that it works particularly well. I'll see when I have like a very vibrant, like when I get the Pro Max with the orange on it, like how that does. But like with this blue, it doesn't look all too different than like a darker version of clear. So, and then I'm guessing you need to use a MagSafe case that is from Apple, correct?
Yes. So this is because all of Apple's MagSafe cases have effectively NFC.
Yeah.
And that's why if you connect a particular colored case, the MagSafe ring that will appear on screen when you connect that case will be the color of that case.
Yes.
So this has been there dating back to the iPhone 12, but Apple's really never done anything more with it than just an animation. So it's nice to see it being used for something else.
Yeah, now you can choose to, and if you don't have a case, it just puts it to, I don't remember, there's like a default that it goes to. Is it the phone color? Does it just default back to the phone color? I have no idea.
I think so.
But yeah, I mean, there's some new options there. I mean, I think it's a good update. We, like you said, we've been complaining for years about new designs and we want something new and refresh and over. And then they give it to us and everyone's like, well, no, not that. And it's like, well, what's wrong with it? I think it's fine. I think it's kind of setting the tone for the future. And like everything for the first time has been upgraded with this.
I think the other thing we also have to bear in mind is that the design that was introduced with iOS 7 was iterated on all the way through to iOS 18. That is a long time to work on that design. And when iOS 7 came out, it wasn't perfect. There were a lot of things in there that were taken away pretty fast and a lot of design decisions that were rolled back or completely changed. And so does iOS 26 feel as intuitive and usable and polished as iOS 18 did? No. But is it about where iOS 7 was? Yes. And I think that that is something that we need to be understanding of going into iOS 27, iOS 28. And we will see improvements as this operating system and this new design language evolves and develops and Apple learns what does work and what doesn't. I mean, already consider how far something as simple as notifications have come through the beta testing process. At the very beginning, I remember when I put the first beta on my iPhone, notifications were almost completely illegible.
Yep.
It was awful. It was so transparent. They were very pale. The text itself was also white or at least very pale. And the level of contrast was so low that it almost hurt your eyes to try and read you something as basic as your own notifications.
Yeah.
But now they look so good. Now you've got the sort of the perfect amount of translucency where you get an impression of what is behind that content, but it remains totally legible. I think they look a huge amount better than they did in iOS 18. They're a lot more playful, but they're still totally functional. And if Apple can apply that same diligence across the system over the next few years, I think it will be okay.
It's funny that you said that. I was just going to say, like, just think about the last 8 or 9 betas. I don't know how many we finished with, but like it was such a huge improvement, not only in just the design, but the performance was rough, like really bad for the first 1 or 2. And then it got better and it kind of settled into its own. And now it's like a whole new group of people who are discovering it for the first time that are complaining about it. So it's just, it's funny to see, but I think it's a great update. And I like, we'll jump to macOS, I guess, or let's go to iOS or iPadOS since that is pretty much largely the same subset of features. But the biggest thing, and that's what, by the way, if you want to check out my video, I just put out one yesterday. It was mostly about how we have a lot of new Mac features or like macOS inspired features on the iPad. Most notably, the new like multitasking and windowing feature that you get now. Have you had a chance to play around with that during the beta process? Or did you get a chance to, if you didn't use the beta on your iPad, did you put it on day one when it came out on Monday?
I mean, I have been using the beta on it, and I have mixed feelings.
Oh.
Because I feel like we got everything we'd been asking for, but I'm still not satisfied.
Oh, no. No.
There are some things that I love.
Okay. Like what?
And there are some things that I'm not sure about. The things that I love the new cursor.
Well, sure.
I feel like it has radically improved how useful the trackpad is, how much more natural it feels. The level of precision, obviously, moving from a dot to a point is considerable. And I know it's a tiny thing, but that is a real quality of life improvement. The other thing is the menu bar that you can now invoke, even if you don't use a cursor, you just drag down. And this is considerably better than before, where you had to hold down on command and you got many of those that came up only as keyboard commands. And I think realistically with productivity apps, sometimes you do just need that menu there if you're working on a document, something like that. And that also has been pretty good. The things I'm not sure about is taking away split view.
Okay.
Split view in theory is still present.
Yeah.
But it is only present in windowed mode. And you have to create windows that are kind of the right size and flick them correctly to the right sides of the display in the right way. And then you can kind of resize them in the way that split view used to work. But it is nowhere near as easy to access. It is nowhere near as intuitive. And it just doesn't feel the same.
I think it feels the same when you get to it. But I do agree that it does take a little bit longer to get to it. So you definitely need to open up two apps that you're going to use. And you need to have them like in the windowed mode. They can't be in the full screen, obviously. But then you don't have to do the flick motion. You can, but you can just also hold down on the stoplights, which by the way came to iPad OS as well, which is a very Mac feature. So you got your red, yellow, and green, the whole stoplight, X, minimize, close, whatever. You just hold down on that and then just select the split screen option on that second row there. Just there's like half, quarters, and yeah, it's like 2, 3, and 4 apps that you could have and have them split up that way. And then you're effectively in the same mode. I think what most people are kind of pissed about is that split view or slide over is gone, which I didn't think I would care about. But then there was a time where I just wanted to have a full screen app and slide over something really quickly and then get rid of it. And I missed it then. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, I understand why people are upset about this.
And for me, as a user of the 11-inch iPad Pro, it is a little bit too small for windowed work. I'm never really trying to have it replace my Mac. I'm not that kind of user. I have no desire for my iPad to run macOS. My iPad sits alongside my Mac. I like to pull up, say, my task manager, and I like to listen to music on it. And I often quite like to have both of those things on the screen at the same time. Maybe sometimes I might have Safari up and mail. But on that little display, I'm never going to have 5 apps open to be doing serious work. So it does kind of bother me that I can't do that anymore. And one thing I used to love doing with my iPad was having a multitude of split screen spaces open that I could swipe between. And I know you can kind of do that now, but
that's kind of hidden
just
too.
It's a hidden feature. And I feel like if, say, you have a 13-inch iPad Pro and you have been longing for that Mac style multitasking experience, you will love iPadOS 26. But if you're like me and you never really needed it to replace the Mac, and you were just happy with it as an iPad, but you wanted to be able to do a little bit more than just one app on the screen at one time, it has been a little bit disappointing. Considering that Apple's left Stage Manager on there, they've got these two multitasking modes that you can enable. Why couldn't they have just left the third one that was split screen and slide over?
So the third one should just be, because there's technically three modes. When you go into settings, there are three modes. Full screen app. So it's basically your iPad acts as an iPad. You open up an app. It's in full screen. It's always going to be in full screen and you can't do anything about it. Then there's windowed mode, which is the one that we just talked about. And then there's still Stage Manager. And that one, those two are the only ones that you can cycle between in the control center toggle. So if you swipe down and you long press, that's how you can get to stage manager or windowed, but you cannot go back to full screen that quickly, which kind of makes me angry. Why is that just not a default third mode? And the way to make everyone happy here, Hartley, like you especially, is make the full screen mode the way the iPad was before. The apps can be full screen or they can go in split view, but they're still technically in that full screen kind of area and you have slide over, but you cannot resize, you cannot window, you cannot do any of that. It's either you have one, two apps and slide over and it would be perfect. And then if you want more, you go to the windowed mode. And if you want stage manager, which I don't know if people still want that, then you have that. Like that to me is the logical way to make it, but I don't know. I guess Apple doesn't. I don't know how much like processing power it takes to be able to do all of that. And I don't know. The M4 chips are pretty powerful, so I'd imagine that these iPads can.
This has been working on iPads since the introduction of the original iPad Pro back in whatever it was, 2015. So I just feel like
to be able to retain all those spaces. I just don't know if it's able to do all of that, but I can imagine it probably could.
I, as an iPad user, can get over myself with this, and life goes on. But right. I do feel sorry for those iPad users that have been using this feature day in, day out for years, and it is just effectively gone now. And it will take way longer. It's way less intuitive. And fundamentally, if you were using this feature every day, this will get in your way now.
Yeah. Because you can still.
And I guess you just have to move over to Mac style windowing, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. And you can still kind of get to what you had before. And in some places, it can be better because you have more apps that you can have on a screen. But you're right. It is definitely a function or a product of which iPad do you have? Do you have a iPad mini? Because you're probably pretty upset right now that you can't do slide over or split screen on your tiny, you know, but maybe that's not what you're using it for. But there are some people who do. And then if you've got we're all 11 now. There's no more 10.5 inch, or is that just the ninth gen? There's some older ones, but let's just say effectively 11 and 13 inch. If you're on the 11 inch, you could kind of go both ways, but like you're probably not wanting to have 30 apps open at one time. I'm on the 13, so for me, it's not a huge deal, but I still do miss occasionally the ability to have that just split screen, make it super easy, and I just don't need all of that stuff at that moment in time. To me, I have had the iPad replace the Mac for very specific scenarios. Traveling is a huge one for me. I don't ever want to take my Mac out on a plane because it's not comfortable. I don't enjoy it. And when I want to watch content and when I want to flip back and forth between those things, the iPad is very good at being a work device and a play device quickly and easily and being able to switch between those two things. The Mac is not that. I don't use my Mac on a plane. So that's why I can pretty much do everything that I need to do when I'm traveling with an iPad. But not everyone can. So I totally understand your point. It's valid, but I still think it is a good update though.
And for those users that do want to be able to do more work with their iPad, and especially large display iPads, I think it is fantastic. I think if you were going to, say you're a student, you need to replace your old PC laptop and you're considering buying an iPad for the first time, and maybe you're looking at the 13-inch iPad Air, iPadOS 26 makes that way more viable with a proper desktop class multitasking experience. So absolutely.
I mean, I think that this is personally, I know that like we just mentioned, it does definitely leave out some people and it doesn't leave you in the dust completely, but it does make your life a little bit harder. But overall, and especially since I've been clamoring for this, I feel like I have to just accept that it's what we've wanted and it's a good update. And I do think the implementations are good, although Exposé is a little weird. I guess I just don't understand how
it does feel a little different, doesn't it?
It's not the same as the Mac, or maybe I'm just insane, but like, I don't like it. I would just prefer, because like what makes me angry about it is when you have like a quad window, what do they call it? Is it quarters? I don't know. They call it like the,
I think so.
When you have the four like square apps tiled off, okay? And then you go into Exposé, you see those four apps in like a group. Okay, cool. I switch over to a different app. And depending on how that app was, it just then kind of brings that app on top of the quarters sometimes. And it's like, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to switch to that app and that app only. And if that was in full screen, I want to go to that. Or if it was like its own window, I want it to be like what you were talking about before, the spaces of it all just being different. But like, then when I go back to the quad grouped apps, then I want those apps to remain the same way. And it doesn't always do that. And it drives me insane. So I don't really like that. But everything else has been pretty good. The cursor is really good. I think the reason why I'm taking it for granted is because it just feels so seamless going from the Mac now to this. It's like, oh yeah, this is what I've been using. I have forgotten all about the little circle, and I'm kind of glad that that's gone. The menu bar, I haven't really had a need for it quite yet, but it will be useful when that time comes. I think most of the apps, I kind of just already know the keyboard shortcuts after years of being forced to do it. But there will come a day where I'm in an app and I'm like, how do you do this again? And I can find it, and that's always nice. The Finder and like the file, I mean, the Files app being more like Finder a little bit and having the ability to set, I think the biggest thing is what app opens up what file type. That is huge. It's coming together quite nicely. I think it's really good personally.
I agree. And of course you get all of the other features from iOS 26.
Right. Messages, polls. You get the phone app for some reason. You get the phone app on the Mac too. You get journal.
I actually quite like it. Yeah. I will say that I have now found myself initiating actual phone calls from my iPad for the first time. Because the only way you could do this before was like buried in contacts or like to initiate it that way. Whereas I just want to go in the phone app and do it the way I'm used to. So
I mean, if you're
underrated feature,
yeah, actually. if you're on your iPad and you're like, I got to make a quick call. Like, why should you pick up your phone? I know that's going to be my first instinct because it's just been like that for years, but you have the ability, and same with your Mac, and you can do all of that stuff on there. So that's really cool. I'm trying to think of what else there really is that's not like an iOS feature.
There's not a huge amount.
Yeah,
I think we should move on to macOS.
Mostly just that. And macOS is kind of the same deal. And I have had a ton of comments about people absolutely hating macOS Liquid Design integration. So I am curious how you feel about it.
Initially, I hated it. But I actually have come to quite like it. There are a few apps I'm not sure about it in. I'm not sure about it in Notes. Sometimes sidebars look a bit weird, but in general, I do think that the Mac feels a lot fresher. And I even would say maybe I like Liquid Glass the most on the Mac.
Yeah. Like, do you like the no menu bar, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, and one of my tips for those who like are listening and screaming in your car or in your desk or wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can go turn it back on if you want the background for the menu bar. It's just in the settings, in the menu bar settings. So fun little tip there. If you hate it, you can go back. I know a lot of people commented on my video when I mentioned that saying thank you because they just don't like it. But I like that it's just like just a floating thing. It's everything just feels more seamless and like, I don't know. It just makes it feel more modern and sleek, but maybe people don't want modern and sleek. I don't know. I don't know what people want anymore. I feel so out of touch with like the everyday person when it comes to
like. I surprised myself with macOS.
Yeah.
Because everyone seems to dislike that one the most. But yeah. I think I like this one the most. And I don't really know why.
How could you hate the new Spotlight? I think it's so good. And I am mad.
The new Spotlight is good.
I am very mad because my main device is a MacBook Pro and a Mac Studio, and I use the Mac Studio more. I finally put it on my main MacBook Pro, and I've been using it a lot there, but I cannot get it on my Mac Studio because there is a bug. And I'm only bringing this up again because I just want, if there's anyone at Apple that's listening to this, please help me and the five other people that have emailed us about how their Mac Studio does not upgrade to macOS 26. Because I don't know if you've seen the article, but on release day, I was in our Slack going like, is anyone else having a problem upgrading? Because I cannot get this to work. It goes through the update process, like black screen, progress bar, says your computer's updating, going to be ready in 10 minutes. I step away. I come back. There's no error message. There's no nothing. It's on Sequoia still. I don't understand what's happening. I cannot get it to update. It just goes back. And then it's like, the update's here. It's in settings. Just update now. I update now. It has to re-download it again. So I'm like, what just happened? Apparently, I still don't really understand fully, but a lot of M3 Ultra, which is what mine is, Mac Studio people are having the same issue. And I think it's very specific to those who are coming from 15.7 on an M3 Ultra. It just, there's some kernel panic or something that's happening in the background, and it does not give you an error message. So you really don't have any idea unless you dig through a bunch of stuff that I'm too stupid to know where to dig for. But I've just was reading a lot of posts and people were like saying that it's just not downloading the right one, I guess, and it's having a hard time doing it. So I don't know what's happening, but I would really like a fix to this so I can enjoy macOS 26 on my main everyday computer. But maybe it's a sign that I shouldn't upgrade yet, because there used to be problems in the past. I think it's been running perfectly fine. I don't know about you. How's the performance been for you?
It's been pretty great. I have a M1 Pro, MacBook Pro. And while it doesn't feel as fast as it did when I bought it, it certainly is handling it well enough. I am going to need a new MacBook Pro in the next couple of years. I think that's pretty clear. The M1 series of devices are starting to feel a little bit tired. They're just starting to groan a little under pressure now. I do feel it. But they're okay. So I've been pretty happy with it.
I don't want to dive too deep into the weeds here. But if you're going to upgrade soon, shouldn't you wait for this new rumored OLED Touch MacBook Pro? Again, we could do a whole show on this later, because this was new information, I believe, yesterday from Ming-Chi Kuo. But is it going into production next year, to be released next year, or is it in 27?
I think we're not entirely clear whether it is going to be late next year or early 27.
I hope it's late next year.
So we have had it with MacBook Pros before where we've expected them, say, October, and then it's dragged on into November, December, and then we end up getting it via a press release in January. So I think it depends. It is a major redesign we're expecting. And I think a lot of M1 users, maybe M2 users, will consider upgrading, considering what a substantial update this will be with both OLED and a touchscreen and a slimmer chassis. And of course, new Apple Silicon chips, which to me, I'm starting to feel ready for now. I really would quite like a new chip and some more memory.
Yeah. I mean, I'm ready for anything new at this point, but that OLED Touch MacBook Pro has my ears, like, they perked up a little bit when I saw that. I guess it was my eyes. I didn't really hear it. So anything else in macOS? We got the phone app. We got the journal app, which I'm sure you're happy about. I know that helps for long-form journaling. It's really hard to do on your phone. So now it's across all platforms, right? iOS, iPadOS, and macOS. The main three platforms, I should say. How do you feel about the clear icons on macOS? Because I actually really like it there. I don't usually change the colors.
It's better, yeah. But I still don't love it.
See, I think my reasoning for it is I don't customize the icons on my iPhone or iPad because I have them set in a specific spot, and I usually just use the color association and like the way it looks to know like what icons I'm hitting and what apps I'm opening up. With macOS, though, I just use Spotlight for everything. So, like, I don't really care what it looks like, per se, on the dock, because I rarely ever go down to the dock and actually open it up. So I guess it could just be anything down there if it's all one uniform, clear coding, especially with, like, the widgets. It looks so good with the clear. It's like that frosted line. I don't know. I personally like it there. I can see myself changing the colors more. Control Center is kind of a big one too. Have you personalized Control Center and the menu bar?
I have. I think it is way better than it was before. Obviously, it takes a lot of cues from Control Center on the iPhone. And I think it's really handy to be able to pin some of those controls up into the menu bar if you want to. So I have enjoyed that. I would like to see more toggles and more controls, and I'd like to be able to take up a little bit more space with that. But I have been pretty happy.
Are we supposed to get third-party controls there? I have not seen any of them.
I think we're supposed to.
I just assumed that was happening, and I think I've been saying that third-party developers are going to do that, but I don't actually know. I don't see anything at all, so I am very confused if that's actually happening.
I don't see any. I've just gone to it on my Mac right now.
It's a little concerning.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll get that in time. Maybe that's a thing for next year.
I like that you get live activities in your Mac. That's pretty useful too. Just the other day on my MacBook, when I was traveling, I ordered some DoorDash and it was nice to be able to see, you know, that up there and kind of know what's happening and not have to look at my phone all the time. So that's cool. Trying to think of what else there is. I mean, we briefly talked about shortcuts or Spotlight. I'm sorry. So Spotlight has been improved. You do finally get a clipboard manager, but it's not, I don't know if it's going to replace my actual clipboard manager, because I like going back many days and this is just the day that you're in. So that's a little limited in typical Apple fashion. Hopefully that'll change and we'll get more of a history. And then I like the little actions. Have you used the actions at all, where you could kind of just like fire off an email from Spotlight, don't have to do anything else?
I'm starting to. I really need more third-party apps to support it for me to be fully convinced, but that has started happening.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, that Mac OS has pretty much got all the other features then that you would want. I think it's also a really good update. I really like Control Center's look. I like the liquid glass elements, like the volume controls and all of that. The lock screen you can now customize even more so than you could before. I just think this is finally a good era of updates across all the operating systems. By the way, I wanted to talk about tvOS, and I'm looking on the website here, and it's got like all of them grouped together. So an overview, and then iOS, macOS, iPadOS, watchOS, visionOS. There is no tvOS. That's how minimal the update is. They're just like, you know what, we're not even going to put it on here.
It's the one update I haven't even, I didn't run the betas for it because I just didn't care enough.
And I did no research on it. But the only thing that I wanted to ask you about, I was hoping you would know, is in tvOS, I just updated it finally yesterday and I saw the profile icons pop up when you first like turn it on so that you can go into each user's profile. And that has me really intrigued because I want to know more about that. Like, is it, and I'll take time to look at it after this, I guess, but like, is it all apps tailored to, and I believe it is, like to that person? They can have their own home screen set up. Can they have their own apps on there? And can I put apps for my kids that I don't want them to have access to? Is it just logins for them? And can it be limited to that? And they can't see anybody else's? Like, that's the kind of stuff that has me intrigued as a parent.
I don't know if it goes that far, I think you can at least have a custom home screen.
Okay. So maybe like that's what I'll do for the kids is like, they don't need all the apps that we have on there. I don't need them going into all of that. Just like make it easier for them to see. That's the kind of stuff that I am into because I want to keep my stuff separate than theirs. They don't need to be seeing the shows. Like, is the Up Next their shows? Like, that's what I want to know. I guess I just have to do it. So we'll find out.
Will be.
Okay.
That will be.
You're for sure. Okay. So they won't see like...
That's been the case for quite a while now.
Yeah. Like if I'm watching it. Okay. So I never use the profiles because my kids are just now of the age where they finally have their own, you know, iPads, and I've made their own stuff for them, which, by the way, there's a lot of good. If you're a parent who's finally getting into that stage too, there's a lot of good accessibility features that Apple has implemented, or not accessibility, family features that Apple has implemented now. And it's a little bit easier to kind of create those profiles for people and better parental controls, which before they were fine, but they were very limited. It was super vague. And it was like, all right, well, I want my kid to be able to do this, and I know it doesn't necessarily meet those like age requirements, but like I just want them to be able to access this app and have no problems with it because I trust it. And now there's a little bit more fine tuning that you can do, and it's just a wider set of parental controls, which is kind of nice. So Hartley, I know that doesn't really interest you right now, but maybe one day in the future,
maybe
when you have little Hartleys running around, you'll want to update that. But anything else in the betas that you, or not in the beta? Well, they're not betas now, but in the releases that you wanted to highlight before we end it?
Oh, I think we should mention watchOS at the very least. I mean, visionOS I can't really talk about because I don't have a Vision Pro, but watchOS, definitely I would like to draw attention to one feature.
Okay.
Which is sleep score.
Okay, that's a very
it's a newly announced feature. But even on my old Apple Watch Series 8, it works perfectly. I have found myself checking it every morning. It provides a way better overview and insight of the quality of my sleep. And I think even the suggestions about why you got the score you did. So maybe you went to bed 30 minutes later than normal, and then there were more interruptions than normal. Even just that it gives you something to aim for. So, okay, maybe I can try and improve my score night over night. It's just way easier to understand.
Yeah.
The one thing I'd really like, actually, that doesn't exist, surprisingly, is a complication to see your sleep score, which I was shocked that that doesn't exist, but it doesn't. Great new feature.
So where do you go to see your sleep score? Is it in the sleep portion of your watch?
You go into the sleep app.
Okay. So yeah,
the sleep app.
And can you see it on your phone at all? Is that in the health app?
Yeah, it shows it in health. And there is an iOS widget for it as well. So I've added that to my my home screen. And I find that way better than knowing, oh, I got 7 hours, 52 minutes of sleep. That doesn't really do a whole lot for me, but I really like knowing, okay, my sleep score last night was 84. It's out of 100, and there are different things that contribute to that. And the breakdown is pretty clear. I've always been quite a big fan of Apple Watch sleep tracking, but this, for me, has taken it to the next level.
So I personally think this health app is kind of a mess. I think we need to fix it again. I don't know. I've been trying to find my sleep score. You have to hit search to get to any of those categories, which is interesting. And I've been asking this question as if I didn't know, but I kind of did know the answer. I can't see my sleep score, and I don't wear an Apple Watch to sleep. So you're going to say, well, Dan, you need to do that. But that's not true. It does integrate with third-party like devices that can measure your sleep. And I have quite a few of them. And apparently none of them work. I don't know if it's just these specific devices are not working or if mine's just not working at all. I have an Oura ring that I wear to sleep. I have an 8 sleep mattress topper thing. And I have a Sleep Number bed. I know those two are conflicting. I could spend a whole episode talking about why I have both of those and they make sense. I have not turned on the sleep health thing for the Sleep Number bed. So maybe I'll try that one. But I wanted it to read for my 8 sleep because I do feverishly check my Oura ring and my 8 sleep. And they're both very consistent with each other. I check my sleep score a ton from that. I really take it seriously and I try to see what all my metrics are. And if I had a rough night, I can go in there and kind of pinpoint. And I tag things and I know not to do that again. So drinking something before bed, like alcohol or something, I don't usually do. But if I did, I know it's going to contribute to all of that. So did you get all of that info or is it kind of working towards that in the sleep score? Because I can't see mine, so I have no idea.
So it, I believe, uses a variety of things like your consistency of when you've been to bed, obviously what time you wake up, how much deep sleep you've had, interruptions. But it is designed around the Apple Watch. So I don't know how well this will integrate with third-party tools. But for me, as someone who doesn't have any of that third-party equipment and has always just used the Apple Watch, I think it works great. And it has certainly added something to that experience for me.
Like I've seen people say that they've had their sleep score show up from a non-Apple Watch. So I'm fairly confused on how to do that. So you know what? I'm going into my Sleep Number app here and I'm going to try to add that. And we'll see tonight if that works. I also love when people reach out if I say something that I don't know and they're like, this is how you do it. That is so helpful. So please continue to do that. Just because, you know, we are very hyper-focused on specific things when we cover tech that a lot of the other stuff, you know, I don't go home and read more about all the new stuff because I want to separate my work and my personal life. So like there are some things I miss out if I'm not focusing my work day on that. So feel free to let us know any of the things that we weren't sure about. Please, you know, let us know what it is or if there's anything that you want to tell us about your experience or your features, let us know in the comments, emails, whatever. And we'll catch everybody in the next episode.